Well, today, as we said, we begin this umbrella series, Do Unto Others. It's part of a campaign, and we're going to spend some time in this over the next few weeks. Your pastors have entitled this Do Unto Others series this, Authentically Human, Who Are We This Election Season? So that's a question to put before us this morning. It's a good question, right? Who are we amid so much division and so much polarization in America? Who are we in the middle of this? So with that question before us, I pulled a few pictures, and Alexis helped me with this too, both of us together, from, and there's the title of our series, Authentically Human. When we're authentically human, we're called to the image of God. And these are some of pictures that we pulled from the last presidential debate. You saw the candidates there, and these are people that were watching the debate real time. So these are shots that were taken of people as they watched Trump and Harris debate. Look at those faces. Oh my goodness, right? Let's scroll back through those. Oh my goodness. A lot was made, and even in the recent vice presidential debate, a lot has been made about the faces that the candidates themselves made, right? And some people making fun of one candidate or the other's faces. But these are people. You don't know what they're thinking, but you can kind of see, right, this tenseness, this frustration, despair. I don't know what this poor woman is feeling, or the woman behind her. You know, we can only read into it, but we certainly can see as we come into worship this morning that, my goodness, there's a heaviness when we encounter this campaign, right? There's a heaviness. We feel it. We feel it. And we can read a lot onto it, and we feel it within ourselves. And it's, you know, the data that we have, it kind of supports this. I just pulled something from Pew Research last year, just general in terms of politics. They ask Americans to say, you know, how they felt about this U.S. politics these days. And this is the result. 80%, and this is last year, felt negative about politics. Another 10% were neutral, and then the last group there, they were just confused or they didn't really know. Isn't that, like, heavy? The negativity that the political environment and the U.S. brings to us, it's real. It's real. The thought of such broad, sweeping negativity, it's kind of heavy and it's hard. Now, some of us in this room, we remember in America more optimistic times. We do, of where there wasn't this prevailing negativity. And there's some of you in this room that are younger, you don't remember. You don't remember a time when there was more optimism floating about the streets and communities of America. Our political reality is one of negativity, and that's real, and I just kind of want to state that. You know this up front. You know this. And as we move through this series over the next few weeks, I hope that we can rise above that negativity and that we can find a ground of some hope and a way to respond in the season that pulls us to the center and maybe helps us inspire others toward the way of Christ. That's our hope. Yes. There's a lot of negativity out there. There's a lot of tension out there. There's a lot of hardness out there. But we, the people of Christ, were made for something else. And we are to campaign for something else. And that's why this campaign for kindness and do unto others is important. Well, boy, that's heavy. We start out that way. So I thought this might be a good spot for my one political joke. All right, so here's my one political joke. I offer it to you. I see some of you, you're ready to hear it, right? So, okay, so a pastor and a politician show up at the pearly gates. And they're at heaven. St. Peter is there to greet these two. And I don't know what St. Peter does there, but there's some paperwork to fill out, and he does all the things. And then he says to this pastor and to this politician, let me show you around. Let me show you to where you're going to be staying. And so they take a little walk down the streets of gold or whatever, and the pastor is greeted to look at his dwelling place. And St. Peter goes, here is where you're going to stay for all eternity. And they look around, and it's a very simple, tiny home. You know tiny homes, right? It's one of those tiny houses. It's got a bed. It's got a nightstand and a chair. And that's all there is for the pastor. And he says, come on, let's move along. So they leave the pastor there, and the politician and St. Peter walk on down the street, and they get to this place where there's a grand four-story mansion. There's manicured gardens out front with sprinklers. There's a staff working those gardens. There's a pool in the back. And the politician is just standing there. His jaw drops, and he looks at St. Peter, and he goes, what in the world? The holy man down the street, he had such a simple dwelling. Why? Why am I placed here? And St. Peter looks at him, and he smiles. He says, oh, we got thousands of those guys and ladies up here. You're the first one ever of your kind that we've seen. We want to treat you really well. So I offer that to you, church. Use it. You've got my permission to use it this season. Humor does help things. And we don't want this to be a heavy series. We want this to be a series where you can find some hope and where you reflect in your own heart about how you respond in the season. Okay? So foundationally, I wanted to name, yeah, there's a lot of negativity out there, but we're called to something different. A few other things that I want to say. One is, and I know this has been a long-held standard of United Methodist and here at Flores, one foundation in the season that I want to call you to is I want to call you to vote, okay? I want you to exercise your right and privilege as citizens to vote. It's something that I have encouraged my children to do in our family. I call them to vote, and I call them to be informed about their voting. I don't tell them how to vote. I don't tell my kids how to vote. All of them are voting when my youngest, this will be the first presidential election that she gets to vote in this year. Second, here at Flores, same as always, we're not going to tell you how to vote, okay? We want you to vote, but there's going to be nothing in the series in front of us that is going to be intended to tell you how to vote. Now, some churches do that, and I fundamentally feel that that's wrong. You know, you can have your own opinions about it. If you're looking for a space and a place in this time for someone to tell you to vote one way or another, to vote Trump or Harris, you're not going to find that here at Flores. So we're not going to tell you how to vote. We want to encourage you to be informed through your faith, to vote, but you're not going to be told how to vote here. The other thing is, we're in this campaign, and I know our staff even have Do Unto Others t-shirts. It's very much like the Be Kind campaign that you remember from a while back. Those are out here in the gathering space. If you would like one today, you can check in at that table. We are joining in this campaign for kindness, this Do Unto Others space, along with our siblings in the faith. So this is a United Methodist movement that we at Flores over a year ago decided that we felt that our community and our church needed to be a part of. So as we begin this, I want you to know that from Adam Hamilton's church out at the Church of the Resurrection to my husband's church down at Sterling, we are joining with other United Methodists to say there is a different way. There's a different way. I see a shirt right in the middle. All right, she's got the shirt on this morning. There is a different way, and that's the way of Christ. That's this do unto others that's a part of our text this morning, coming right from the Sermon on the Mount. So in unity with our siblings in the faith, we enter into this space, and we look at the gospel this morning. Let's look at that a little bit. Comes from the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus talks about, and you know the words about love for enemies. He says, you don't just need to love them, you need to go an extra mile. And then we get what often we teach our kids or our kids learn as the golden rule. We get these words from Jesus: do to others as you would have them do to you. Golden rule. Do to others as you would have them do to you. I remember it was about first grade for my oldest daughter, and her teacher in first grade, they spent a good part of a day in school one day talking about living into the golden rule, about doing unto others as you want other people to do unto you. And she came home so excited, learning about this concept from Miss Washington, her first grade teacher, and she was telling me all about it, and I said, hey, babe, this is great, because you know who said those words first? And she says, no, Mommy. I said, Jesus. And she looked at me so confused, right? This is the part of her world where the community, right, the school intersected with her church. And I went to scripture and I found it for her. And I said, this comes from the Sermon on the Mount. This is Jesus' way. Miss Washington, although, and she's like, Mommy, she didn't talk about Jesus' day. I said, well, she really can't in the school, but she's teaching you the way of Jesus. And that was one of those cool parent moments, parents, where you go, oh, this is so cool. This is where the good stuff of life intersects with the good stuff of Jesus. And she was, it's like her little mind was blown. It's like, Jesus and Miss Washington, like, oh, they say the same things. That cool moment. Well, Jesus says a little bit more than just do unto others. He goes on further and kind of wraps it and pulls it together. He says this. We'll go ahead and pull up the next part of that text. He's kind of summarizing here. I want to ask you to read this with me this morning. Read with me. Love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High. For He Himself is kind to the ungrateful and to the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Wow. Wow. Jesus, I believe, in those words that we just read, is connecting everything back to the way that we are wired, the way that we were created to live, to be the image of God in this world. Right? The Father is kind. The Creator is kind. Therefore, you're called to be kind and merciful even in the face of negativity, even in the face of these hard times of where we feel polarized and where we too often want to go to our corners and draw lines of red and blue. No, Jesus says, be merciful. Be kind, for your Father in heaven is kind. It pulls back to this way of Christ and the way we talk about being authentically human, of where we see Christ outstretched on the cross, right? He's being crucified by his enemies, and he says what? Father, forgive them, right? What are the other words? They don't know what they're doing. They do not know what they do. Forgive them. This way of showing mercy, that's the way of kindness. What's interesting when we think about the way we're polarized and the way that we're wired to be people of mercy and kindness is that scientifically, and I imagine you've heard this or you know this, scientifically, I'm fascinated by the study of DNA. Did you know that from human to human, that our DNA is about 99% similar? It's actually more than 99% similar, okay? So as I look at Lori up here, Lori and my DNA is over 99% the same. Or anybody else in the room. Isn't that wild when you think about it? There's less than 1% of how we're wired and made that is different. But yet that little bit of difference causes so much pain and harm in our world. That different piece of where God has created us uniquely with diversity, and that's a good thing, but we let that diversity and diversity in our opinions divide us. What's even more fascinating to me when I think about kindness is that the word kindness in its root And the root of kindness, you may know this, it has its origin in the same kind of word from which family comes, like kinship, kindness, think about it. When we talk about being kind and being wired to be kind no matter what, it invokes the same feeling when we think about how it feels to receive kindness or to give kindness, the thing that we have about our family. Kinship, kindness, interrelated. So we begin this series considering the implications of what it means when we just have that little less than 1% difference from one another. The thing that separates us to our corners and polarizes us and causes us to be resentful toward one another, all those feelings, we begin to think about how we're created to be something different. We're created to be kin, to be family. Jesus saw things differently. That's how he was able to say those words from the cross. So that brings about a lot of questions for this morning as we start this series. Some of those questions for me is, why do we always assume the worst from one another? When there's really so much similar about us, why do we always assume the worst? And why do we, in that assumption, why do we paint those that are different from us and in the political realm who think differently about politics from us with such vile? Why do we get so inflamed and even feel entitled to tear people down as if they're not human, as if they're not kin, as if our God doesn't call us to something better? The good news in all this, as we talk about kindness and this way, is that kindness is something, as Jesus says, the Father's kind, you need to be kind. If we're the image of God, we're wired to do this, and when we are kind, we flourish. There's a ton of research. There's a ton of social science research that supports this. This is just a little bit of summary that comes from Dr. Michelle Robin. Dr. Robin is someone that has done a lot of work on kindness. She has this thing called the 31-Day Kindness Campaign. Let's put her quote on the screen. Here we go. She says, nearly all the research she studied this on the power of kindness shows that one practicing kindness is happier, has less stress, read it there, better relationships, is more successful in business, their marriages are happy, and they live longer. This is a way we're wired to flourish, to live into the abundant life that Christ calls us toward, is to have this way of kindness no matter what. It's a powerful thing. It's key. This golden rule stuff that our kids are taught in kindergarten and first grade, who knew, right? God knew. But yet, that little less than 1%, it gets at us. We're called into a space where our whole worldview can change. And that's what that research from the doctor says. It's like your worldview can change, your life can change when you practice kindness. When you come from a stand of kindness instead of opposition. Of where I'm going to take my side, I'm going to take my corner, and that other person may do very well that thing. They may be ready to go at it with you, but you have a choice. You have a choice in this season. You have a choice in all the seasons of your life. It's the lens that we see through that has the ability to tear down, to cause harm, to shape the next generation, even church. One of the things I remember as a kid is my grandmother always worked the election polls. She was a teacher and a beloved principal in our small community in Virginia, but she always worked the election polls. Now, when I was growing up, she was of a political party that most of the people in our community wasn't. And so as a little kid, as I observed her work in the poll, again, a beloved member of the community, went to church, I would see how things changed on election day. And people's interaction with my grandmother. This confused me. is that people who generally thought highly of her, friendly with her, went to church with her, worked alongside her in the school, they treated her differently at the polls because they knew her party. And one of the things I remember clearly about those long days that she would spend at the polls is that we would usually be called to bring her something to eat. Because it's a long day, right? But what would be happening when we would bring her something to eat is the other political party, who was the majority in that area at the time, they would have brought food for everybody. And she would say it would be the best looking, best smelling food, but none of that was offered to the opposing party. Again, these are people who work together, and she was the teacher of their children, of the principal of the children in the school, and she went to church with some of these folks, but they didn't bring her food like they brought because she was the different party. And as a little kid, viewing this, I thought, how weird. Why are people so mean to my grandma? You know, they like her other days, but on election, oh no. No, couldn't speak to her, gave her dirty looks. It was a weird thing that shaped my little heart as I watched our political reality go down. Now, that was a long time ago. Things are even worse now than in my grandmother's day. Kindness can speak so much to how we respond and have a potential across those divisions. What might I have seen a little bit differently if I could understood that my grandmother was of a different party and yet everybody treated each other kindly in the midst of an election? I didn't see that, unfortunately, in my community. Theologian and scholar Stanley Hauerwas, he has a lot to say about kindness. Hauerwas is a renowned theologian. Some Time magazine actually said in the early 2000s that he was the greatest theologian. I want to take a look just a moment. This is an interview with him where he's talking about kindness. Let's take a look at Stanley.
How to recover a sense of kindness that is tough is part of the great challenge, because kindness is so oftentimes identified with a kind of self-effacement that I think is not really kindness, because self-effacement can still be a form of passive-aggressive behavior that says, well, of course, I'm going to let you do this, but you got to feel guilty in relationship to me. But I think genuine kindness is a great gift that comes through a recognition that I have time in this world to love another in a manner that doesn't try to control them. So kindness is the touch that otherwise would not be there.
Kindness is the touch in this world that otherwise wouldn't be there if we weren't so, if we didn't take on this image of God. The world, church, needs this touch. It needs your touch and my touch, our hearts backed up with our actions, even when we feel so much negativity and so much polarization. Hauerwas said, and it so connects with this do unto others mentality that Jesus calls us to. He says, kindness is a gift and it's a challenge. It's not a superficial thing. He said, when it's superficial or when it seems kind of wishy-washy, self-effacing, then it actually can harm. Kindness has to come from the love of God that is present, implanted in you, that was implanted in you as you were created in the image of God. I was pleased this week that as we reflected on last week, Alexis was moving around with a camera at the brunch bash, and she was asking some of you in the church about your favorite word. And this is what a few people in the church just spontaneously said about kindness. Let's take a look.
What's my word would be kindness. This world needs more kindness, and I am all about helping others and contributing to this society.
And my word would be kindness, because these kinds of acts of service are efforts to show kindness.
My word is kindness. Kindness is something you show to people who are in need of help and a need. And I think that they get a quite love out of it and know that someone else out there that cares about them and love them, and they probably may, you know what I mean? It may motivate them by kindness and helping them. Kindness like motivates the person in need of help and communicating with them, stuff like that. That's kindness. And I appreciate being kindness and kind to the world.
I'd say my word is kindness. I feel like the world needs more and more of that. And kindness is free. If we just pause for a moment, there are many opportunities around us every day to extend more kindness.
I love that. It's free, right? And what we need to remember as we build this foundation for talking about this over the next few weeks, it's implanted within us. Kindness is the nature of Christ. Kindness is the nature of the Creator of God. We are created in that image. And so when you feel the tension, when you see the negativity erupt, when you feel pushed to the side of red or blue or some other place, you have a choice. That touch, that choice can change a room. It can change a life. And as you saw in the research, it can change your life and your heart. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Amen.